As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
And now, Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred with your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Joining me this week is Bill Moheiser, the longtime trap slapper and drummer extraordinaire in the Fleshtones. He and his fellow purveyors of Super Rock have a new album for 2020 coming out on Yep Rock Records, titled Face of the Screaming Werewolf. It was available on Record Store Day, but won't have an official release until September the 11th. It's their 22nd full-length album, and our coolest song off it is called You Gotta Love Love. Let's hear some of that now, and then I'll be back with Bill for our Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Once more into the breach with the Mighty Manfred for our coolest conversations. And on the line with me now is rock and roll warrior Bill Moheiser, the drummer with those purveyors of super rock, the Fleshtones. How are you, Bill?
Terrific, Manfred. And it's been a long time since we got together. And I hope we can get together and play some shows like we used to back in the fun days. Aren't fun days.
Certainly interesting days, days that we can share stories about when we're on the other side. Where are you right now?
I'm in Troy, New York, my hometown, as a matter of fact. It's just north of New York City, about a two-hour drive. And when I need to get together with the band, I just hop on the Greyhound and go down to New York, and we do whatever we're going to do.
So have you and your family and friends been able to keep healthy in these COVID times?
Well, yeah, fortunately. You know, there's a lot of open space here. We're not all crammed in.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of all the years I lived in New York and, you know, the little apartments, the little closets I lived in, and thinking, oh, my God, to be forced to stay in like that must have just been very difficult for the New Yorkers. But up here we can get out and breathe nice air, and fortunately there hasn't been too high of a rate of infection up here, and we're trying to keep it that way.
Right. Well, the Fleshtones music certainly has got black cultural influences, all sorts of 50s R&B, rock and roll, 60s soul. Have you seen or participated in any of these protests or marches? Has any of that been happening around Troy?
Oh, very much so. Just 2 weeks ago, there was about 11,000 people in town Troy.
Wow.
I didn't go down. Among other things, I just didn't want to be around that many people.
Yeah.
And that was an event, and I hope there's not a spike in cases in this area as a result of that congregation.
Yeah, I was looking at some articles online that the initial feedback is that they don't think that there's going to be, based on it being outside and in most instances, people, you know, being with masks. Thinking about you guys again now, so the band started about 1976. This makes it about 44 years of Flesh Tones. You're the drummer on 99%, at least, of the band's recordings. You joined it when it was like 1980, and you met those guys in a diner, you were telling me one time?
Yeah, I joined in May of 1980. We were all living in the East Village, and there was a Polish diner that I used to love to go to. And down at the end of the counter one lunchtime, I hear these guys talking about needing a drummer. They said something like, well, for the album, the two songs on the album that we have to record, we can use Clem. And I said, are they talking about Clem Burke from Blondie? And, you know, I kind of got interested. So I just went down and introduced myself. And, you know, they got my number. And a few weeks later, they gave me a call. And I went up and played with them for a little while, a little audition, I guess. And what they were talking about was the album called 2x5. Five bands, five New York bands, each recorded two songs for this album. And sure enough, Clem did two songs, but he had another job, you know, so he couldn't stay with the Flesh Tones. So that's why I came in.
Yeah, 2x5, I think that was like a compilation record, Marty Towle's Red Star label. Is that what that was?
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you introduced yourself as a drummer. When did you actually start playing drums? Was that when you grew up in Troy?
That's right. Yeah, when I was, I got started, in my opinion, a little bit late. I was already 15. And, but I just had, you know, it just hit me that this is what I wanted to do. Music was in my family. My father played trumpet and keyboard. My mother played piano. And when I was a little kid, I used to see them getting all dressed up on a Friday or Saturday night, totally transforming into different people. And I said, what the heck is going on here? And then I found out they were going out to play their instruments. And I think that had an effect on me to want to, you know, kind of be like that, be able to put on some nice clothes and go out. And, well, be careful what you ask for, because, you know, I've had my array of nice, shiny clothes that I don't wear during the day, but I go out at night with them. And that was probably a big motivation for getting that start, even though, in my opinion, it was a little late start.
Well, 15, but were you playing in any bands when you were still in high school?
Yeah, I was. In fact, by 16 and a half, I was out playing underage in taverns and halls. And sometimes we were doing five nights a week. I linked up with a band called the Charades, and we were just playing all the top 40 music of the time. Mm-hmm. And that was entertainment at the time, way before DJs or anything.
And so I was going to ask if your folks had this sort of musical background. Were they generally supportive of your drumming career?
Yeah. Yeah. Even though they knew I was underage playing in these places. Now, the age back then was 18. So being 17, you know, it's not so bad. You'd never be able to pull that off now. Yeah. There's no way. But back then, people didn't care too much. And they were delighted that I was going out and playing and actually making a couple of bucks.
When did the Flesh Tones really start touring? Because you started playing with them. They seem to be doing a lot of stuff around New York. When did they actually start to tour outside of New York City?
Well, that was in the late summer and fall of 1980. We went out to L.A. and we lived there for about 3 months to try to get our West Coast profile up. And we did quite a few around the country tours as well. But things really started, you know, we really did hit the road around late 1980.
You had toured the country before that as a puppeteer. Is that right?
Yes, I did. I did. I lived in Chicago in the around 1973-74, and I answered an ad in the newspaper simply saying national tour puppet show needs people. So I answered the call and went down to the Studebaker Theater on Michigan Avenue in Chicago, where the rig was set up. And you know, it was a full stage rig with there was actually marionettes, life-size marionettes, and the show was Pinocchio. And there were eight of us up high, all dressed in black, so as not to be seen too much. And they needed a tall, skinny guy so that the shorter people could pass underneath as their marionette was walking across the stage. So I fit the bill, and they said, okay, you're hired. And we went around the country doing this, and it was absolutely fantastic.
So if you hadn't hooked up with the Fleshtones, do you think you would have done more puppetry stuff?
No, I don't think so. The show kind of closed down. You know, I think we oversaturated the market for a while, so we just had to take a break. And on that break is when I moved to New York City, moved into the East Village, and quickly met the guys, met the Fleshtones. And so with that, that's really what I wanted to do. With that, I had no desire to go back to Chicago or, you know, get out of the New York scene. I belonged in New York. You know, I grew up. I moved in to the East Village, two blocks from CBGB's.
Oh.
So I was going down there all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, that environment was just so fabulous. It wasn't anything I was going to leave at any time soon.
So you were doing this puppetry, Pinocchio, and then you meet these guys, and then literally it's like, there are no strings on me. I'm going to be slapping the traps with these guys going forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of an age difference between you and I guess the next couple of guys, Peter Zaremba, Keith Strang. You're maybe, what, about 6 years older than Peter?
Yes, I am.
Is there ever like a thing where it's, has there ever been any kind of generation gap thing where those guys will be like, oh, this is really cool. And you're thinking, no, actually, that's not that cool, guys.
No. Because, you know, 6 years isn't too much.
No.
I've got a lot more on Ken, that's for sure. But he's been with us for over 30 years, so I guess things are working out pretty good, you know.
Here we're talking about Ken Fox, your bass player, who I guess is 13 years younger than yourself.
That's about right. I am definitely the elder in the band, although a lot of times I don't act like it.
Well, I've seen some interviews with the Fleshtones like really early on, and it seems like you are the spokesman. It's like they're asking questions to the band and everybody kind of turns their head to you and then you respond. Now, was that because you were older or just more traveled and dare say more worldly?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I didn't know that. You know, when you're looking at something, you pick up more than when you're actually there. Maybe it was just because I was a newer guy way back then or something. They wanted to know who they were dealing with. But we all share the mic pretty equally now when it comes to these interviews and stuff. But I got to check out some of those old things. Go to YouTube and see some of the old things with the band.
Yeah, yeah,
maybe I was the big mouth at one time.
Or at least the particular interview. So often I've heard the band make fun of the notion of rock stardom. And yet for you guys, it could have happened. You were on a pretty hip label early on, IRS. You appeared on American Bandstand. Those first album's pretty critically acclaimed. If that had been your fate, if rock stardom had been your fate, do you think you could have carried that albatross?
Well, I'll tell you, it's the road not taken. I would have liked to have seen what that was like, but you do wonder, would we still be playing?
Yeah.
If that had occurred, you know, you get into these pitfalls and distractions, and it possibly wouldn't have been good for the band in terms of longevity.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a very interesting question. It literally is that road that you hadn't gone down. We would certainly like more commercial success. Any band did. We weren't trying to deny ourselves commercial success in a you know, multi-million-dollar way. That didn't come. So what, you know? You know, we're all still alive, and especially in times like this, you're thankful for what you have.
Absolutely.
I know I certainly am.
Another example of that is the 60s band The Remains, where they were signed pretty soon after forming, and they were on the Ed Sullivan Show, and they toured with the Beatles across North America, and they put out some singles and album, and they just abruptly quit. And they reformed many years later, and they were asked about it, and they said, well, you know, we realized that if we kept going, we never would have remained. We never would have stayed as friends. You know, we went off and we did other things, and at least we could always play together again and be together again. So I think that sort of relates back to what you're saying. And I think one thing people forget is that many bands from that era when you guys started out, I mean, with the exception, I suppose, of Blondie, but they've had years of inactivity where you guys were always touring, always putting out some type of record or a single, and there was never any inactivity over this whole time, and just sort of becoming living legends, if we mentioned as purveyors of super rock. Could you have pictured yourself doing anything else over this course of time?
Nothing that I would want to do, you know, other than play music. And it's special to stay in a band for a great length of time, as you know yourself. And it really is something special. There's no end in sight, even as we kind of grow up a little bit here. there's no end in sight. We're anxious to get back to Europe. We think we're going to be doing that in October. And it's just every day I wake up and think, what am I doing with the band today? Not what am I doing today? We just work our lives around being in the Fleshtones.
Well, you know, that ties nicely with the fact that I want us to talk about our coolest song in the world this week. You got to love love. It's this week's coolest song in the world. It's off the new album Face of the Screaming Werewolf out on Yep Rock Records. It was available this past Saturday on Record Store Day, and it'll see a general release in the fall in September. Now, that song is credited to your guitar player, Keith Strang. Do you happen to know what inspired it? You Gotta Love Love?
Well, specifically, I don't. I just remembered Peter and Keith demoing that at Keith's kitchen table, and me and Kenny listening to it, and working on the song actually a lot in the back of our van as we did a tour of Germany right prior to recording, and sitting there with Keith and getting into all the details. What do you want to hear here? What do you want to hear that like that? Mm-hmm. And, but you know, I didn't really ask him about what's going on here, Keith. How do you want me to play the drums? That's all I wanted out of it.
Yeah. Well, so Keith plays in the Split Squad with Michael Giblin, and you guys recorded the new album at Michael's studio. Is that right?
That's right. Red Chuck Studios in Mechanicsburg. Yeah, we were down there actually exactly a year ago this time. We did our first portion. You know, we would go down for maybe 7 days, lay down tracks, and then we came back again in July of last year and did another 10 days. Actually, it was more like six recording and then another 4 days of mixing. And so, Mike has got a great place in Mechanicsburg. It's down in his basement. He's a terrific engineer, a great guy to hang out with. Him and Ruth down in Mechanicsburg, we would sit out at night and watch the fireflies in June. It was a great place to record.
Well, this place is, we've played before there nearby Harrisburg, and then we've gone back to his place to crash. And as you say, it's a very nice house, and in the basement is the studio. But it's kind of right up against this corn field. Were the corn stalks at full height when you were out there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Ever see the movie Children of the Corn?
Yes, you know what? I did see that. I did see that back in the day. But nobody came out of the corn or anything like that. You know, it wasn't. But it was. It's just beautiful. I mean, at that time of year, it's as green as far as you can see. It's a very nice, relaxing place. Very nice, relaxing place to be.
Well, you know, every Fleshtones album that comes out, I eagerly go through, as you know. I'm a big fan. The new album has like 11 tracks. And for the last number of years, I'm also searching for something else. And that's because a number of years ago, you guys covered Please, Mr. Custer. And that one has your lovely voice on it. And
It does,
but they don't sing the. I don't know of any other songs that you have sung on. Have you sung on any other songs except for Please, Mr. Custer?
Let me see. No, I think that was it. And I'm trying to find. I'm going through my CDs. I forget what album that was on, but we recorded that with Paul Johnson, who was living in Flatbush, Brooklyn. And he had his studio down there, down in his basement, too. For some reason, we had a hankering to do good old Mr. Custer. So it was kind of fun doing it. And we had some fun times recording at Paul's because a lot of it was real makeshift. Oh, we were doing funny things with tremolo guitars, miking the drums with tremolo, and, you know, really easy to experiment because it was our place. And we recorded a couple albums with Paul, and it was very nice, real good. I miss those days.
Well, you mentioned working with Michael was really good as well. I guess my notes say that the album was co-produced him and you guys together. Was he very hands-on in a producer role or not?
Oh, completely. Not only suggestions, but joining us, playing in the studio. You know, he's quite a talent. Yeah, Mike. On stage, he's fabulous.
Yeah,
and he's a great producer, engineer, and I think we'll be getting back there again for our next record, whenever that's going to be. We were hoping to have this out quite a while ago, but with everything going on. Yeah. As the whole world got delayed, so did our release date. But we got one now, just in time for Halloween.
Right.
Yep.
It was funny. I think of this year as started referring to it as the lost year, you know, where just stuff isn't going. Just everything that it wanted to have happen this year is just going to have to happen next year instead.
Yep. It affected us all, and it is kind of lost. I certainly feel the worst for people who, you know, early on, like in March, April, you know, they had family members in the hospital and they couldn't visit them. And that would be excruciating. I think the rest of us who didn't have that experience are pretty lucky. All I'm talking about is a delay of an album release.
Right.
I can take that. No problem. I feel sorry for the people who were far more worse burden than that, you know.
So you mentioned you guys might be going overseas to Europe in the fall, maybe around October. Have you guys thought anything about doing live streaming playing where you're playing and it's being streamed?
Not to my knowledge, tell you the truth, but I haven't been talking to anybody about that. And in all of our emails to each other, we haven't been. We're just talking about hopefully the live shows coming up.
Well, good luck with that. I hope that comes together. And that one of my concerns about traveling right now is going to another country and they require, you know, some countries are requiring a 2 weeks of quarantine if you're coming from a place with high incidence of cases like ourselves, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm hoping mm-hmm. that will pass before we're actually in a point of touring again. Right now, we can take a listen to one more track off the new album. And I like the idea of wrapping up with a track, "The Show Is Over," kind of well-suited. Now, is that a Peter song? He's singing lead on it.
Yeah, yes, it is. I love that tune. I think that's it's a great tune. And, you know, we ended the album with an instrumental, which is a very nice thing that Peter came up with, Somerset Maugham.
Right.
But I do I very much like the show is over.
And I love the rhyme in there. He has the couplet about being a slob and she's a snob. I thought that was a pretty great line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you remember anything particular about recording that track?
Let's see. Well, you know, a few of the things we kind of worked up, and I think this is one of those songs, as I recall, we kind of worked it up right in the studio. And, you know, we do a take and say, let's change this, let's change that. And usually when we go in, we kind of have everything hammered down. And a couple of the tunes, we were just kind of like, you know, freelancing along the way. I kind of got a kick out of that with a couple of the tunes. And I believe "The Show Is Over" was one of those.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Well, thank you for having me. And I think you're doing great work for the rock and roll there, Manfred. And you have been for a long, long time. Real pleasure hearing your voice again. It's been a few years on the phone. I hear your voice on the radio, thank God, all the time. But it's nice getting together with you.
Oh, absolutely. And so nice speaking with you. And please give my best to your compatriots.
Will do.
Well, we're going to take a listen now to "The Show Is Over" from the new Fleshtones album, Face of the Screaming Werewolf, here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Show is over. That's the Fleshtones off their 2020 album, Face of the Screaming Werewolf, out on Yep Rock Records beginning September the 11th. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's drummer, Bill Milheiser, for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. And thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. And be sure and join me next week for your Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe, Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Don't let it slide, baby, diamond ring.